Welcome to Freethinker Radio. I'm Micah. I'm here with Derek. Glad to be here on KPFT. Man, we've been broadcasting this show for what, 10 years now through the before Occupy, during Occupy, on internet radio, through HD at KPFT, through different time slots on FM. Glad to have this one. Glad to be here. Yeah. And excited about today's show. We got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here for another week of uncensored news and underground music here on Freethinker Radio. For those who might be new, especially those who are listening to us on our new slot on KPFT and Houston 90.1, Houston's community radio station, you can find us now at 5 p.m., of course, as you guys who are driving home right now know. If you want to find out more about us, thehoustonfreethinkers.com is our website. You can find our archives, some of the history of what led to Freethinker Radio. As Micah said, we've been doing this for over a decade now, and we're happy to continue that journey here on KPFT. And we also broadcast every week live on Facebook, on Odyssey, on Float, on Rockfin, on DLive. And if you don't know about any of those platforms, you can go over to thehoustonfreethinkers.com and get plugged into where else you can find our works. And of course, Freethinker Radio, in addition to being on KPFT, is on Spotify if you want to search Freethinker Radio and find us there and catch up with some of the older shows. But yeah, we got another packed episode here, Micah, huh?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I'm excited about it. We've got at least two songs we're going to get into. I like the intro. Many people hadn't heard that yet. The War is a Racket. You know, we got a lot of stories to get into. I know we're going to get into COVID. We got some Federal Reserve stories. We're just going all over the place. And I think you had a Houston story to get us going. Do you want to go with that?
Yeah, I want to get into it. So the next little batch of stories, probably for this first segment before our music break, will be focused, of course, on the ongoing issue of COVID-19, and we have a lot of different angles we're going to be looking at that today. First, I wanted to take a look back about maybe 2 weeks ago now to a story that I myself did in Houston before I came back to Mexico. You can find it at theconsciousresistance.com. It's under the title, Houston begins giving COVID-19 shots to children despite extremely low risk. And this was November 5th, and I actually attended one of the press conferences where Dr. David Peirce, who's the Houston Health Authority, considered the top doctor in the city, basically, was present while children age 5 to 11 were the first to receive the COVID shots in Houston. And there wasn't a really big crowd there, but there was some families lined up, and they were giving the kids the shots, both the flu shot and the COVID shot. So I'm going to go ahead and play this clip right here for those who hadn't heard us report on this a couple weeks ago. I think what's said here in my interview, you'll see that we come into the building. For those who watch the video, the beginning of the video is me just coming in to the building, taking some video, and then I do an interview with Dr. David Peirce about the whole situation. So we're going to go ahead and play that clip in just a second here. I'm going to pull that up, but I really want you to listen to the words that Dr. Peirce said and the questions that I ask him, because they're specifically related to the rest of the issues we bring up here in today's show. So check this clip out.
Vaccination program for children 5 to 11, and we're doing it here at the Houston Health Department, and we've got our first couple of kids who are going to get vaccinated here today.
Okay. What are your thoughts on parents and just health medical professionals who are saying children are of extremely low risk to this and maybe feel like, you know what, I'm going to sit this out?
Yeah. So, you know, I think parents really need to consider the facts. And so, first of all, yes, children do tend to do much better if they become infected than adults. Some children, unfortunately, don't do quite so well. And in the United States, we've had over 600 children have died from COVID vaccine. I'm sorry. I need to completely redo that. I think parents do recognize that children generally do much better than adults should they become infected with the coronavirus. But some kids, unfortunately, don't. So in the United States, we've already had over 600 children have died from it. Just as importantly, we also have a large number of kids who have had these long-term, the long COVID. And in addition, kids can get this MISC, the multi-organ inflammatory syndrome in children. So that's important. Now, all those problems that we worry about with vaccines, the reality is your chances of having those complications like the myocarditis are much greater if you get infected with the virus than if with the vaccine. So with the vaccine, in the adolescent boys, there's been a tiny percentage that have gotten this myocarditis, the heart inflammation. Most of those kids do well with very minimal sort of therapies, and then most of those kids do recover completely. We're seeing about six times as much of that complication with kids who get infected with the wild virus. So if you want to minimize your chances of developing that, you should get vaccinated. The other thing is, that parents need to consider is with this age group, the 5 to 11, we've saw none of those problems. There have been no complications from the vaccine at all. And it's probably because they're in a younger age group. Maybe just, you know, their physiology is different. We've not seen those problems. And then the third thing to consider is that kids, while they do, you know, not so bad with the virus when they're infected with it, they are terrific at spreading it. So if you have anybody in your family that you're worried about contracting the virus, and this may be an aunt or a grandparent who, even if they've been vaccinated, we still don't want to expose them to it, because kids, through no fault of their own, are great at spreading viruses throughout families.
So you said that, if I heard you correct, the number was there's been 600 deaths. Is that Texas or?
It's United States.
So still, though, again, compared to the number of COVID cases, population size, 600 is a pretty low number.
Yeah. So we're looking at over 500,000 Americans. It's only 600 of them are children. Right. So again, a really tiny percentage. You're absolutely right.
Okay. And yeah, and you know, you mentioned the myocarditis. That's something that people have been concerned about as we're seeing some of the studies come up. I was reviewing the Pfizer clinical trials for the children this morning, and the study sample was only 2,000 people, yep. And actually only 1,000 kids got that. Yep. What are your thoughts on that sample size?
Well, it is a small sample size, right? And so again, we'll have to, you know, wait and see what happens. But even within that sample size, you know, there were no problems. And so, you know, if there are parents who want to wait and see, I've got no issue with that. And I respect them wanting to do that. But, you know, at this point, again, the problems with getting, we know the risk for those kids who get infected. We know that there are complications, many more complications, you know, not only the myocarditis, but, you know, blood clots and, you know, pneumonias and neurologic problems. There's all kinds of problems that kids can face if they get infected. So far with the vaccine, we've not seen any of that in this age group. And so, again, it's a question of weighing the risks and seeing which one is the lesser risk. And right now, it looks like it's going to be the vaccine is the far lesser risk.
Okay. I have one more question. I wanted to, I was reviewing some of your previous statements. I don't know if you remember, we've done interviews over the last year. In August, yourself and Dr. Peter Hotez said statements, and I'm going to quote you, that there's close to zero chance of the unvaccinated making it through those coming weeks without getting sick. Yep. And yet here we are in early November. Texas cases are going down, hospitalization rates going down. That didn't really pan out to what you guys, I mean, do you want to review those statements?
You raise a really important phenomenon. What we don't know, what we don't have a good handle on right now is the numbers are coming down, because you're right. I'm having a hard time explaining why the numbers are coming down right now. We know what our vaccination rate is. And within Houston, for all people, all ages, not just the 18 above or the 12 or above, but of all ages, we're looking at about 56% of people are fully vaccinated. There's about another 10% that have gotten one shot. What we don't know is how many people in the community have got some degree of natural immunity from previous infection. And so at this point, I'm left to assume that that must be getting us up to the 85 to 90% of herd immunity so that the virus can't spread very well. Now, I say that, but the other thing is that if we have another wave in January, because it would be January, February, if you look at the timing sequence, because there is this possibility that within pandemics, there's this wave phenomenon that we don't completely understand. So without knowing how many people have natural immunity, I'm having a hard time explaining why the wave is coming down now. And I will have, in quite honestly, I'll even have...
Welcome back to Freethinker Radio, everyone. Just wanted to play that clip there. As you heard, that was Dr. Peirce, the Houston Health Authority, the lead doctor, top doctor in the Houston area. And he, as he acknowledged, tiny percentage of kids, you know, that are at risk of this thing, but still they're calling for them to get the shots. He was willing to admit that. He acknowledged that his previous statements that, you know, things were about to get really dark, him and Peter Hotez, who is often a doomsayer for the Houston area, their statements didn't come true, that cases are all trending downwards, you know, and people are going without masks. I mean, it was just an interesting conversation, and I hope that whatever you took away from that, that gave you something to think about. Mike, any kind of follow-up thoughts on that?
Well, the numbers matter, you know, looking at this from, like, say we don't know anything, the numbers would matter a lot. I appreciate the doctor said, you know, that he wouldn't trouble people over their decision to wait for greater numbers as far as just looking at this to evaluate risks. And then it's a question of the risks of what. So if if only so many people were even getting infected with it in the first place, if only so many children were getting infected. I agree that children are germ carriers, but if only so many children were being infected with it, that number six times worse is what he's saying, like roughly with the symptoms, right? If you get the natural virus versus you have the shot and you get it.
Yeah.
If anything, the shot seems like they're trying to pitch it now as a symptom mitigator, if anything, right? You know, we already know you can still pass COVID on being vaccinated. So
I definitely remember, and I know you remember them telling us last year that this was the shot was the key to get everything back to normal, right? Now it's like, okay, it might slow things down. It still passes on, as you're saying. And I even mentioned to him that there have been Israeli studies on natural immunity, and he was willing to admit to that as well.
I did think it was interesting that he said maybe between the number of people, which were interesting, less than half the people in this area are less than fully vaccinated. A lot of people walk around thinking that it's, you know, a huge number, but it's less than half. Also thinking about it this way. So if it were, you know, a huge number of people vaccinated and the children are vaccinated and then they got a 1 in 6 chance, right? They're saying it's a sixth as bad for the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated. Well, what if the vaccination is the introduction to it? So then you have, you know, these results. I don't know. I don't pretend to be a virologist, but I do think there's a point at which you could have so many people vaccinated that even though they only have a sixth of the impact of it, you know, the dangers of the vaccine perhaps could outweigh the, you know, mitigating the symptoms of COVID, you know, whereas if you only had a fraction of people infected with COVID in the first place, you know, that of the numbers we think there are, then you're taking this risk to as a symptom mitigator with a skewed metric of what the risk really is.
Sure. And that's even just assuming we can fully trust their numbers. And as we've covered here on the show, like that there's reason to be skeptical of CDC numbers as well as case numbers that are based on the PCR. And, you know, we're talking locally here, right? This is Dr. David Peirce, the Houston Health Authority. In Houston, we also know in the last year, nurses have been fired by Houston Methodist Hospital. And I want to just make a note. I know we talked about this story last week that the Houston Methodist doctor, Mary Bode, I believe, Bowden, she was suspended. We were talking about this last week for some of her statements on Twitter. It wasn't even anything she'd done at the hospital. And because they found out she had been through her own private practice, separately from her job at the hospital, been giving people ivermectin. And she was suspended and then she decided to resign. And now there might be a lawsuit. Well, she held a press conference here in Houston just last week. And all the local news actually showed up. And there's a video of her talking about it. It's got almost 1 million views on it. It's pretty interesting, her talking about her suspension following her, quote, controversial COVID-19 tweets. So, you know, these issues are very relevant to the city of Houston. You know, is why I bring that up, because you got Houston Health Authority saying, like, hey, people need to be getting the shot. Yeah, they're not forcing it at the moment. But the city of Houston does have their own policy for their employees that they have to be shot or tested. And then we know, again, that Houston Methodist Hospital, the same one firing this doctor, is the first hospital in the country to fire nurses for not getting the jab. That's what led to us interviewing Jennifer Bridges a couple months back and her lawsuit against the hospital. So these things are very relevant, right? And Micah, one of the reasons that people have questions about the shots and, you know, without getting even to the science, right? Because like you said, neither of us are virologists, but we do look to the research of other people who are more, you know, knowledgeable in this area. But even outside of the science side of things, one of the other reasons I've seen people skeptical is because of the relationship between what is often termed big pharma and the government itself, right? So I have this article pulled up here from The Conversation, which does some interesting pieces periodically.
So you're telling me that big pharma and the government are two separate entities, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know if you knew that. They're not actually the same thing. But this article is kind of trying to pull some of that apart. This is from earlier in the year, but it asks a good question. Why is the FDA funded in part by the companies it regulates? Which to me seems a reasonable question, like, you know, not a crazy conspiracy theory to have that kind of questionable, suspicious, skeptical of corporations and their intentions and motives. I would suspect that a lot of KPFT listeners probably are skeptical of corporations in different ways. And this is, I think, one of those areas we can ask those questions, right? And so we don't even have to read this article. We will, of course, link the articles we're covering today at thehoustonfreethinkers.com in the archive for today's shows. But this one just gets into some of the history of the FDA doing some shady things and the influence of big pharma and AIDS, the way AIDS changed the FDA and just different things, different kind of mechanisms around it. But I think even outside of the issues they're bringing up, just on a more basic level, what people understand is that, for example, when we're talking about COVID-19, that Pfizer, as one example, was able to produce their shots, their mRNA shots with taxpayer funding, right? And then they profit on the back end of it, right? We know that last year there was talk of an investigation into certain politicians who seem to have bought stocks in companies that have now made a lot of money. I remember hearing about that story for about a week and it disappeared. But people understand this idea that there could be conflicts of interest, profit motive, these sort of things. I don't think it's, you know, something we have to really explain too much to the audiences here. But when people, I think it's important to bring that up because people are like, why are people just take the jab, right? And then you have folks saying, here's a legit reason, right? I'm concerned about this conflict of interest between these companies. And that makes me think, should I fully trust this science as it's called? Because maybe there's, you know, I think that there's plenty of legitimate reason. One other reason I would add that I often hear from people who are skeptical of the shots and big pharma generally is that the companies are indemnified against liability, right, Micah? Like there's no other industry that exists that, I mean, that I can think of where they can create a product, again, in this case, taxpayer funded product. And then if it harms you, whether they say that's very rare or not, it does happen. And if they harm you, you can't sue them. And if you do want to seek recourse, you have to go through this private vaccine injury court. That's not even a real court. It's just some private thing they made in the government. But that whole court is funded by taxpayers. So, you know, at all way, you know, those to me, the fact that they're indemnified against any sort of liability and the fact that there's these huge conflicts of interest are two legitimate reasons why people are skeptical of just rushing into taking these shots, right?
Oh, definitely. And even the doctor himself, you know, in the video, in the interview there, stated other reasons. He said he understood why people would want to wait for greater numbers. So I don't think it's, you know, some kind of weird, not understandable position, you know, and that's what the people who are, I guess, vehement, for lack of another word, need to understand. Screaming at people and using that as like, you know, your shield and freedom of speech and health and caring about other people isn't helping you to understand where the other is coming from, you know, and in doing that, you're not being open to new ideas. So I think that that's, you know, this issue, like so many, you know, people get very passionate about, and the media, as usual, has done everything it can to stoke those passions, typically fear and concern and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and that is for those who might be new and haven't heard us on Freethinker Radio in generally, or those who are tuned in on KPFT because we have a new time slot now, Fridays at 5 p.m., which we're thankful for. That's what our show is all about, Freethinker Radio. It's all about kind of having these conversations, bringing free minds, free hearts, individual thinking, and we really miss having the phone calls at the studio and being able to broadcast and have live phone calls, because that was just such a crucial part of the show, because we would, in all honesty, have people calling saying, you guys shouldn't be allowed on air. And then we would have people saying, thank you so much for sharing this information and for talking about these things when nobody else on the radio will, right? So that's what Freethinker Radio is about. We don't expect everybody to agree. We don't all agree on everything. And that's what we're here to have, a dialogue. And so before we move to the next story, Micah, I want to play a clip that our buddy Johnny, who is usually here, our co-host slash producer, is not here tonight. He's spending Thanksgiving week with his family. But he did send in one little request for us to play this short clip. It's a comedic clip, so just listen along. It's a guy being satirical. His name is Ryan Long. He's a comedian. He's got a YouTube channel. But it really emphasizes the points we were just making about conflicts of interest, why people don't trust big pharma, and how, again, the FDA is funded in part by some of the companies it's supposed to regulate. And many people call that regulatory capture. They're a captured agency, right? And it's not just big pharma that we see that with the FDA. So check out this quick clip. We'll be right back. This is from Ryan Long about how he hates big pharma, except for Pfizer. We'll be right back.
My name is Dustin, and I hate big pharmaceutical companies, except for Pfizer. You know, I did go to Occupy Wall Street. Now I'm a little more concerned with occupying a space in my tattoo sleeve with my new Pfizer tat.
Pfizer.
Pfizer? You?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched the Martin Shkreli doc and it pissed me off what he did raising those prices. What an ethical company does is take money from the government to make the product, have the government force people to buy the product, get the government to pay for your commercial, then print money to subsidize it. If you asked me a couple years ago, I wouldn't have thought that I'd be wearing a big pharmaceutical company's t-shirt, but, you know, Pfizer's just different, you know what I mean? They're not like other companies. So they had to play a couple dollars back in the day for fraudulent marketing. Yeah, it's called faking it till you make it. Obviously, their haters are coming out of the woodworks now that they're on top. Yeah, my pronouns are Pfizer. I'd say about 50% of my identity is that I hate pharmaceutical companies and 50% of my identity is that I love Pfizer. Maybe I'd get Pfizer shaved in my head, sort of like black guys do with Nike. Do not get me started on fast food corporations unless you got a minute. Companies like McDonald's won't even pay people a living wage. You know, whereas a real company like You Know Who paid some of their employees like Alan Borla about $21 million last year. So yeah, take notes, McDonald's. $21 million for one employee. They didn't have to do that. You a Pfizer guy or?
I already got Pfizer, man. Yeah.
Pfizer?
I got the booster too.
Are you going to get a second or third booster or just the one?
No, I'm going to continue to roll up.
Might do the fourth? I'm hoping to get to five.
Yeah.
Respect, bro.
All right, man.
I'm sort of like a feel the burn guy, and I know Bernie Sanders said we need to end the greed of Big Pharma, and I do agree with them that we need to end the greed of 99.9999999% of Big Pharma. You know, the big banks, they're against you. If they had any of your own interest at heart, the S&P 500 would just be Pfizer 500 times. Pfizer should team up with Nike, who I hate, to make a sneaker. Bezos! Yeah, the only way that I would be caught dead with a Tesla is if Pfizer acquired the company. 10 things Big Pharma doesn't want you to know. I mean, I'll post this after I scan through it to make sure there's nothing derogatory with my guys in there. Yeah, I wish the CEO of Goldman Sachs was right here right now. We'd throw hands. I just retweeted an article about why Big Pharma's bad and then put Pfizer's logo in my Twitter handle.
All right, welcome back to Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. Yeah, just a little bit of comedy there. Again, that's Ryan Long. You can find him on YouTube and elsewhere, but he's good. There's more and more comedians, Micah, coming out at a really important time using satire. I know some people might hate it, but I definitely think it's a really important thing to be seeing this comedy at this time right now. It's just
definitely comedy. And, you know, as always, all the arts, you know, expressing culture and ideas, but definitely comedy. You know, the world that for a lot of people is kind of an isolated and dark place. So you can reach people, let people know they're not alone with those sort of things. So
I should mention Ryan Long was just in Houston too. For those who might have gone, I know Johnny went to comedy. It was called Skankfest. It was a bunch of comedians and I would say not politically correct comedians. And Ryan Long was there too. So Houston connection there too.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine expecting your comedians to be politically correct. I don't think they ever really did that in all the history of mankind. If we get there, you know that we're all obedient and compliant at that point. You don't have a comedian with a smart aleck, get for real.
Yeah, thankfully there are still some people pushing those boundaries and I think bringing some real truths. It's not even just about, oh, they're being edgy, right? It's like, okay, they're saying factual things just by calling out reality and doing it in a satirical way. And it's kind of funny, but it's also like, wow, that's real life. You know, it's a little scary. But let's go ahead and move forward. We've got a few more COVID stories we'll be covering. And I wanted to bring this one to the audience today. And I know that at KPFT, we have a wide range of audience, but I think generally KPFT is considered to be a community radio station, a progressive radio station. And I know we have folks probably who follow online who might even use that word to describe themselves, but maybe don't feel aligned with the mainstream political parties, right? They consider themselves to be real liberals or leftists or progressives. But whatever you identify as, I think this article it's an important conversation to have. And I just wanted to make a couple of notes to it and get your thoughts on it, Michael. We don't spend too much time. It's from a website I found recently called Unheard, UNHERD, if you want to check them out. This one is called The Left's COVID Failure. Amplifying the crisis is no way to rebuild trust. And this is from Toby Green, a professor of history at King's College in London, and Thomas Fazzi, a writer, journalist, and translator. So I'll just read a couple of paragraphs here. They say that as writers who have always positioned ourselves on the left, we are disturbed at this turn of events. This turn of events, them saying, is that because Donald Trump and Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil expressed doubts to the wisdom of locking people down, that liberals and those on the left of the Western political spectrum, including most socialists, have fallen over themselves to adhere in public to the lockdown strategy of pandemic mitigation and lately to the logic of vaccine passports. Now, as countries across Europe experiment with tighter restrictions of the unvaccinated, left-wing commentators, usually so vocal in the defense of minorities suffering from discrimination, are notable for their silence. And so they continue, is there really no progressive criticism to be made about the quarantining of healthy individuals when the latest research suggests there is vanishingly small difference in terms of transmission between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, which is, again, increasingly being backed up by data. The left's response to COVID now appears as part of a broader crisis in left-wing politics and thought, one which has been going on for 3 decades at least, they write. So it's important to identify the process. And they go deeper into this, but they're kind of just saying, like, people have fell silent about the lockdown. He says Western leftists embrace lockdown, seen as a pro-life and pro-collective choice, a policy that in theory championed public health or the collective right to health. Meanwhile, any criticism of the lockdowns was exorciated as right-wing pro-economy and pro-individual approach, accused of prioritizing profit and business as usual. And so they just kind of go in there and just go through some different aspects of the COVID strategies that we've seen, as well as the talk of vaccine passports. And I think we mentioned last week that now places like Austria and the UK and others are considering and are doing lockdowns of the unvaccinated, even getting to the point now where Austria announced that they're going to have mandatory vaccinations for everybody 12 and older by February. Like, so, you know, but this article, I think, does bring an important point here. So, Michael, what do you think about this? Just this idea that, you know, the left has typically been for civil liberties and for freedom of speech and, you know, like they said, kind of speaking up for people who've been discriminated, and how that might have changed.
I think that's kind of like a strange thing that's kind of like a COVID Trojan horse in a way, for lack of a word. If there were a party, if there were a thing, if there were a group of people, and let's just say they called themselves left, and that people traditionally thought of them like, I guess I've been accidentally put in that group by people because I don't know if I'm left or right or what, but they're like, oh, you're anti-war. You believe in human rights. Like, everyone's really? And, different things, you know, civil liberties, et cetera, you know, well, you have long hair, you must be leftist, you know, whatever. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's crazy because you see the political left, for lack of a better word, the people who like put a big L in front of their name like that. In one part of that article, there was a really profound truth that was said when it was kind of the whole presupposition of these people. We talked about this last episode, where people think they know something, right? They said, you know, anybody who was criticized in the lockdowns was just, you know, they were identified as someone who was just protecting individual interests or this or that, right? Like, it was a bad thing, rather than realizing that half of their own base are just struggling people working, that they just alienated themselves from completely. And that's why I call it kind of like a Trojan horse for those sort of people who wave a big flag about identifying with a name rather than an idea or principle. And in doing that, like I said, they kind of have almost undermined some of very working class people, that the vaccine mandates, the restrictions, the shutdowns and lockdowns have affected the most severely, you know, the ones that are losing their homes, the ones that are being, you know, the downtrodden. And that's the one they, at least that group of people, profess to care about. And in so doing, and recognizing anyone who questioned them as being their ideological other, they made them so. Like, they made them have nowhere else to go, or just, you know, and it's going to have blowback, you know? So I think it's a serious thing, and I'm glad to see someone speak about it. And it goes back to what we said earlier about not being able to communicate with the other, to already know everything about them. You know, you didn't know you were shutting down and hurting all these people in your attempt to help people or whatever.
These are really important points, Mike. I'm glad you brought that up. And yeah, I mean, I think I thought it was a relevant article, essay there from that professor and the other gentleman. I encourage everybody there to check it out. Again, it's at unheard, unherd.com if you want to find that. And so we're going to continue the conversation. One of the reasons why all of what we've just said, talking about people's concerns about the companies being indemnified against liability, talking about the conflicts of interest, talking about like the silence from certain sectors that might have historically stood up for these kinds of things. The reason that conversation, I think, matters is because this other article that you found from Forbes is showing that we still have, for one reason or another, nearly one third of healthcare workers in U.S. hospitals still not receiving the shots, according to a CDC study. And this is as the Biden's attempt at the mandate is kind of on the horizon. And we've talked about last week how the courts have kind of put a hold on Biden's federal mandate for companies of 100 or more for the moment, but it's going to be a court battle for a little while. And I just think it's interesting that when you have numbers like this, and even the Houston numbers, right, he said less than half of the city, right, has received or been fully vaccinated, as they want to call it. And we know, in fact, that that definition is changing too, right? Because you got to get the booster now to be considered fully vaccinated. So knowing all these things and seeing that there are pretty low numbers, it's not just, oh, some right-wing extremists out there. No, there's people in the nursing field, medical field, healthcare, teachers. There's obviously musicians, just regular people, all different kinds of people. Some folks, though, I think a lot of folks that I've heard from don't really know what to do. So even if they don't, they're concerned or they want to give it some more time or whatever, if they're just straight up, you know, hardline against it and they know they're not going to get it, they don't really have other options. So there are people who are complying whether they really want to or not. But let's talk about this for a minute, Mike. I got it pulled up here.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the main part about it was not just like the number, but also, you know, amidst almost a crisis and how much the sector, the need for medical help, that whole sector will be left shorthanded. And it goes back to, what are the numbers really? You know, are we willing to sacrifice a quarter to a third of our medical care in the country, you know, over this? And, you know, that's a separate question over rights or science or what's been done. And I do think that otherwise the rest of this article, it's interesting in the way that it goes about how the different hospitals have more or less vaccination rate. And it turns out that this might be a little alarming. Critical access hospitals had the lowest vaccination rate. So, you know, that's where people, you know, critical access, that's where they were needed. That could be thought of also as a good thing. I mean, obviously there weren't a lot of problems. Meanwhile, you know, the children's hospital had the most highest vaccination rate. So and it's changed over time. It talks about that, how many more and more of them have become vaccinated. Of course, the pressure's gone on, you know, the squeeze. Other than that, there's not too much it gets into. It says the continued refusal of healthcare workers to get the jab has frustrated colleagues and officials, not least because most are already required to be vaccinated against a litany of other diseases in order to work. So it's obviously not people who aren't educated. Even a nurse has to go through a lot of training by today's standards. You know, they have to sacrifice their time and such, much less a doctor who's going to not, you know, just go along with the herd on something that's new and not fully understood. And so I think that's interesting, you know, because they always it seems like the numbers have been a big question in this the whole time. And this is just another example. What's the effect of losing, you know, 30% of the medical staff of this nation? I mean, can we really afford to do that? I mean, these guys are paid a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's some good points in there. Guys, you're listening to Freethinker Radio. We do this every week, and we bring you uncensored news, underground music from Houston and from elsewhere. If you have music you want us to play, it'll be featured on 90.1 KPFT in Houston, as well as the Houston surrounding area out to Galveston and the beach, and of course, online on the internet. So please reach out to us if you'd like us to share your music. Maybe it's a good time for a music break, Micah. What do you think we should
check out? I thought you were just going to do it. Yeah.
I forgot what song we're going to jam.
There's so many good ones. I wish we had the phones. I'm open to anything. Your list is looking good. We're adding more and more to it. Things have changed a little bit in the way we keep track of the songs we can play and such. I know we've got Jeremy. I know we've got Immortal Technique. That's always strong. And we've got the next episode and the next episode. So keep sending the music. Anything you want to hear, that Immortal Technique's pretty good.
Okay, we'll jump into that then real quick. We'll be right back then. Freethinker Radio, we're going to hit you with this Immortal Technique song, and you're listening to Freethinker Radio. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about the latest from the World Health Organization. Even they are warning against making mandates mandatory. And The Lancet coming out and saying, The Lancet Medical Journal saying, wow, even we shouldn't do that, and the World Health Organization. And I'm curious, why are they all of a sudden reversing their positions? We'll talk about that more and more next. Stay tuned, Freethinker Radio. I'm the last one they should ever let speak. I should say politics, forget pros, and
Immortal Technique.
Our way of life is under attack. The survival of our friends is in danger.
There's
a new housing plan for the ghetto eventually. Projects for a new American century. False flag terrorism controlling you mentally. The gospel in the hands of people with no empathy. A mixture of dangerous social chemistry between law enforcement and a military entity. Cameras on the corner of every corner you facing. Testing out a future Gestapo on immigration. Power, consolidation, information restricted. Just like the iron law of oligarchy predicted. Incarcerating the poor among the drug addicted. But not the families of the ruling class that's afflicted. Cause it's a fucking caste system like corrupted Hinduism. I think you should listen. I've been through the system in prison. I've been through religion. Carried the cross as a Christian. Like it was anti-disestablishmentarianism. Until the seeds of despotism arrested my vision. Lyricism with cynicism and syllogisms. Until they bear through Alvis Ocampos and kill me in prison. Chemtrail conditions. Stem cells of Leo Strauss's philosophy. The birth of neocon policy. But I laugh at America's fear. Of a new world order controlling the hemisphere. Cause my people been living that for the past 500 years.
Intelligence, understanding, the facts they deserve to know. No governmental plan should impose its restraints, against your will.
Who do we trust? Who do we trust?
The facts.
Who do we trust? Who do we trust?
Intelligence.
Who can I trust? Who can I trust?
Exposed crimes of the power structure. Enter the fire, cause the truth is now treason to the U.S. Empire. U.S. meddling in almost every foreign election. See where the next drone headed and civilian dead in the Yemen wedding. Barely reported because the weapons were exported from the politicians in the Pentagon. The Saudis bought it and the babies and the children were slaughtered. The authorization, altercation, deplorable, demoralization. Obedience to authority, colonize the minority. Social norm is to conform to the immoral majority. White superiority, secession of separatism, the terrorism of American exceptionalism. Go to Plan B, be free. Fuck the TV, fuck the PD, fuck a Tuskegee VD. Grave plot, soldier pop, corpse rot, spin over. Monsanto weed killer, non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Whistleblower, men are afraid of label, the threat of traitor. Executive legislator trying to suppress your behavior. Intelligence interrogator, collecting metadata. Condemning the messenger and censoring the educator. CIA feed the propaganda to the television. In the next edition, the pundits preach it in repetition. Loyal to the monarchy, hereditary or elected. Fuck a royal family and fuck a president selected.
Secret society, the secret of censorship. Imposing restraints against your will.
Who do we trust? Who do we trust?
The facts.
Who do we trust? Who do we trust?
Intelligence.
Who can I trust? Who can I trust?
Knowledge of himself.
Who can I trust?
Informing and alerting the American people.
What's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole, stole. It was like we had entire training courses. It reminds you of the glory of the American experiment.
All right, welcome back to Freethinker Radio. We got about 20 more minutes with you, a few more stories to cover, so let's just continue on in. Mike, I just wanted to take a moment as we're having this COVID conversation. I feel like it's one of our first episodes, the second episode now back on FM on KPFT. We're really excited about that. Drive time, 5 p.m. Friday afternoons, really great. And we want to, I think, at least for me in a way, kind of catch up some of the audience who might not have heard us in a few months, just about some other stories you might not be hearing about. And one of these we're going to get into now. The World Health Organization held a press conference, a live Q&A on November 16th, and it was streamed via YouTube and some other places, and they were taking live questions. I'm not sure if they took them through YouTube or people had submitted them prior, but they actually did answer some questions that maybe people wouldn't expect them to address, specifically their thoughts on mandatory vaccinations and if this should be a policy that states should seek to enforce. And so I'm just going to play a clip here. This is from Michael Ryan, I believe is his name. Get this pulled up. Michael Ryan with the World Health Organization. Let's see if we can pull up his full position. Senior World Health Organization official. He's the head of World Health Organization's emergency program. And I'll let you hear it and then I'll read the quote just in case you can't hear the audio. But let's just check this out again. This is World Health Organization official speaking on November 16th.
Some governments feel that having attempted that and having tried, at least in their minds, their best to be able to address that, looking to using mandatory vaccination, either mandatory vaccination for work or mandatory vaccination or proof of previous infection to access hotels, restaurants, and even to the extreme of asking people who are unvaccinated to stay home as opposed to vaccinated people being out. And this raises real issues around civil liberties. This raises real issues around human rights. And it's something that governments should consider extremely carefully. They need to be absolutely sure that the benefit of doing this outweighs the risks, and that they have done everything possible to address vaccine hesitancy and other issues, and they feel that they have no other alternative. If these types of mandates are implemented, they need to be implemented for the shortest possible period. As I said, they need to be consistent with national public health and human rights law. WHO's position in general is that mandatory vaccination is not the best means to achieve the highest vaccine uptake. But there are, as I said, specific circumstances. And we've had that historically, hepatitis B vaccination for health workers. And it has to have an objective of protecting that individual or protecting society or protecting the health system. There must be very clear reasons, demonstrated, stated reasons why that action is being taken.
We are seeing cases and deaths increase again for the fourth week in a row.
That was Michael Ryan of the World Health Organization speaking there about vaccine mandates. And yeah, I mean, that's honestly the first time I've heard the World Health Organization or anybody from the World Health Organization take that stance. And that, I think, was an interesting development. Before I get your thoughts on that, Mike, I want to share one more that have really the question I asked before the break is, I'm just curious why these institutions are sort of, in some ways, like flipping the script on what they previously said, or you're just kind of wondering, where have they been, you know, for the last year and a half? Like the World Health Organization, which we know is the number one fund, non-state funder, is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. A lot of people blame them for some of the policies putting out there, but this guy, Michael Ryan, kind of offering an alternative view here. And then we have the Lancet Medical Journal, which is one of the largest, one of the oldest, and I think typically seen as one of the most respected journals out there. They put out this correspondence on, let's see if the date, November 20th, so just days ago, COVID-19 stigmatizing the unvaccinated is not justified. And I think this is just a really, really important story here to take a moment to. And I just wanted to read read two or three quotes from here. So again, this was published on November 20th, and it's warning to government officials that they should stop falsely claiming that, quote, the unvaccinated threatened the vaccinated for COVID-19. And they're calling out high-level officials in the U.S. and Germany who have, quote, used the term pandemic of the unvaccinated to suggest that people who have been vaccinated are not relevant in the epidemiology of COVID-19. Quote, officials' use of this phrase might have encouraged one scientist to claim that the unvaccinated threatened the vaccinated for COVID-19, but this view is far too simple. There is increasing evidence that vaccinated individuals continue to have a relevant role in transmission. And the warning concludes by saying, quote, it is wrong and dangerous to speak of the pandemic of the unvaccinated, and warns that, quote, historically, both the U.S. and Germany have engendered negative experiences by stigmatizing parts of the population for their skin color or their religion. And their final kind of plea is that high-level officials and scientists need to stop the inappropriate stigmatization of the unvaccinated people, who include our patients, colleagues, and fellow citizens, and put an extra effort into bringing society together. So again, that's the World Health Organization and the Lancet Medical Journal, kind of putting out more of what maybe would be an opinion piece or an editorial, but kind of calling into question some of these actions we're seeing. As we're going to get into in a few moments, the Australia, we mentioned Austria locking down quarantine camps in Canada and Australia, as we're about to cover in a moment. I mean, these are really just harrowing concerns, and I'm glad to see at least in lip service, Michael Ryan of the World Health Organization saying that there are serious civil liberties concerns. So what are your thoughts on that, Micah, just in general and their statements, but also maybe why it took so long?
I'm there to stand up and talk about civil liberties. But beyond that, he said another couple of things that are really important. And I would say that when he said it had to be demonstrable reasons, okay, think about that. We were talking about earlier, you know, that how do you know, you know, and how presuppositions and assumptions get in the way of that. And like neither of us being virologists and such. So he's talking about you have to get to the level of understanding something to be able to reveal it to another human being. To demonstrate it so they can understand it. And maybe they have to be a virologist. I don't know. You know, I haven't tried to understand it. I try to stay away from COVID, not understand it. But you get what I'm saying. So there's that point. And that's what seems to be lacking. And that seems to go back to that whole idea of let's have a conversation and a free exchange of ideas. And then we can best determine at which point force, which is more or less what we're talking about, is necessary, whether we're talking about someone, you know, however they may, whatever the agenda may be. There, he's saying, let's have a reasonable, demonstrable proof of it first, which is a double-edged sword because at first it says, let's have that, right? We need that. We need to be rational. And then on the other end, it sets forward a credential whereby you can say, look, here, we provide a demonstrated reason. It protects the society at whole. And therefore, you know, the World Health Organization's ethnologists or ethics people have come to conclusion that it meets the criteria whereby it can be instituted for the minimal amount of time. Now, I'm hoping it's not that way, but, you know, that's just kind of something to think about. But I do think more importantly, it's to think about before you go and yell the other person down, make sure you have, you know, demonstrable reasons to believe the position you're at, that it's time to use force, you know, to yell them down or to vaccinate them or to put them in camps or shut up their freedom of speech or whatever it might be.
Yeah, it's really scary stuff. But again, I'm glad that, I mean, I think that all the different points around that conversation, obviously civil liberties, but just thinking about what they're saying. And I did an interview today with Jeffrey Tucker, who is with the Brownstone Institute. He's been with a lot of different organizations over the last years. And he's, you know, a libertarian thinker, economist, et cetera. But he's focused on COVID a lot from a philosophical, political, and economic standpoint. And yeah, I mean, I think that that's when he was talking earlier and giving some recent talks, his, I think, pretty common sense approach is just saying we need to get back to looking at this rationally, right? And that's kind of what Michael Ryan was saying. Like, look, I'm against the use of vaccine passports and mandates, but what he's saying is at the least there needs to be some real evidence to back this up. Imagine that, you know, before you choose to mandate something or try to force it on people. I want to share one random piece of news that I just saw from one of our listeners here. So we'll get a live update. Apparently in Scotland, you know, they have been pushing back against COVID-19 vaccine passports. And it appears
when our listeners and our audience members engage in conversations, when they provide news, this is the whole point. It's not just about us pontificating news headlines. It's about the interaction and the free flow of ideas. And I saw this one go by too. I'm so glad you grabbed it. Thank you very much, Derek.
Yeah, so COVID vaccine passport scheme will not be extended. This is in Scotland. Scotland will not see a further rollout of vaccine passports, the first minister has announced, saying that situation in Scotland appears to have stabilized. But I believe, as I think our listener is implying, is that this is because there's been mass resistance and protests and things happening. This was, you know, it says, as it stands, quote, people need to show a COVID vaccine passport if they wish to enter a nightclub or analogous venue, a sexual entertainment venue, an unseated indoor event with more than 500 people, an unseated outdoor event with more than 4,000 people, or any event with more than 10,000 people. They have to show these passports. So they do have some measures of it. Now, I don't know if any of that's getting rolled back, but it is saying they're not going to expand it. So that is a small victory in itself, and keep pushing back for those in Scotland who do not want that. And I said we're going to talk a little bit about Australia. I've just got a couple of notes on Australia. We're down to about our last 10 minutes, and we do have some more news we want to cover. But this one is just to continue the conversation. Look, I know there's going to be a diversity of opinions on this, of how people feel about this. For me, it's not something that I think I feel comfortable with. South Australia Health plans regional quarantine camps for Indigenous close contacts. What does that mean? It was just published by abc.net in Australia. says that health authorities in South Australia are racing to organize quarantine camps for Aboriginal people unable to quarantine at home. And some of the key points from the article, the facilities would house Aboriginal people unable to quarantine at home. They would be set up in regional centers like Port Augusta and Mount Gambier. And it says an Indigenous elder says he's disappointed such measures weren't put in place earlier. Somebody who maybe feels that we need this, right? The document says it has been identified that facilities would be required for the quarantining of persons who would otherwise be unable to home quarantine due to their living circumstances. So I want to make that clear. This article isn't talking about them snatching Indigenous people out of their homes and taking them away to quarantine camps, but it is talking about what are being called quarantine camps. And this is something that I've covered before that is out in the open, that Canada has built some of these. China has built quarantine camps. The U.S. government has talked about it. The CDC documents have talked about this. And so I just want to bring this up because I think it's something that does get dismissed. And I have another kind of story in the same vein regarding Australia, because the Australian quarantine camps are something people are resisting. This is from an independent media website, Australia's Authoritarian Pandemics Measures Spark Protest. This is back in August. And I just want to show some of the talk a little bit about some of the things that have been happening. But now here we are in mid to late November, and these protests have been getting massive around the country. And Melbourne, Victoria, North Territory, South Australia. And this article here, though, it talks about one man's experience spending time in a what is sometimes called a camp, but what they call a regional quarantine base, or others call it a temporary home. And this is located in Howard Springs, a small former mining camp in the country's northern tip. Damien Cave, New York Times bureau chief in Sydney, said he stayed at the location while he awaited a negative test result. And he said that his inability to keep track of the days as he is seemingly suspended from his usual reality. He says people wearing face shields drop food off at the door before 5 o'clock. He calls his daughter to ask her how her day at school was. On August 20th, he reports that in addition to the camp, two more were being built in Melbourne and Brisbane, both large enough to hold 2,000 people. And they're called Centers for National Resilience is what they're really the official title. And so he just talks about this quarantine camp and his experience. And it reminds me of a story that I saw in Canada, a similar thing, where somebody sort of tweeted out pictures of what they were experiencing at the quarantine hotel. This one wasn't a camp. It was a forced quarantine in a hotel in Canada that the person had to pay for it. It looked like some food crappier than something you'd see in the county jail in Harris County. And, you know, just some really nasty stuff. And I just think these are the reasons people are pushing back. And then the final thing is another article from The Conversation. Why are Australians so accepting of hotel quarantine? A long history of confining threats to the state. This is from April 2021. I just think it's an interesting article. Again, these links are going to be at the HoustonFreethinkers.com if you want to read along or check out these. I think it adds to the conversation of what we're seeing here, the historical precedent of Australia as a prison colony. And Australians that I talked to some folks a couple of days ago in Australia, and they feel the same way. Like this is just kind of coming around again, like their prison lockdown, authoritarianism, I guess, coming home to roost. But I don't know. What do you think about that, Micah? The necessity, or just the how does it make you feel in general, whether necessary or not, that there's quarantine camps out there?
Okay, we got a wide range of what a quarantine camp could be, you know what I mean? Now, the scary side of it, I'm not so happy with. Let's imagine that grandma has, the nation has already made these rules that a lockdown's in effect, like we saw in many places of the United States, but grandma's in a home or great-grandma or whoever, and so she can't really get all what she needs or something. Maybe in that sort of thing, it'd be good because you're so worried about grandma's survival that you're like, okay, she'll have her food, you know what I mean? That sort of thing. So my point being, again, there's a line by where decisions are made of the value that you're sacrificing for the gain. And, you know, if you could just stay home or you could just go to work and everything be okay, then that's horrible to have these camps and make people go to them and things like that. But if people are like, you know, at home, I can't get my groceries, so I'm going to go stay over there and they provide this, et cetera. I can't fault that too much. I can't see myself as being one of those people because, you know, they give stuff out and the next thing you know, you can't leave or, you know, you got to do things for them or fill out paperwork. I don't know. You know, it's just
doesn't sound like a comfortable situation.
No, I think it's rough and it speaks to the time. And obviously coming from Australia, where we've seen perhaps the most radical, surprisingly, approach to this. And I think it's because they thought they could totally eliminate it. And maybe that should be some of the takeaway, you know. Here at a place where they thought they could totally eliminate it, they've built camps, they've smashed windows, they, you know, make no one leave, you know. And it's does. And meanwhile, Sweden, where they did nothing, has about the same rate as its opposition of its neighbors that did things. And then we see on the CDC's website the map we showed last time of the states like Florida and Texas where the transmission rate is down from where it used to be red to now it's like 2 degrees below that. And you see places like New York and California still red. So I don't know, you know, I think people
there are some lessons to be learned.
Reactions. And yeah, that's the thing. Let this at least be a learning lesson for the next wave of this stuff that they pass around in the future or whatever it might be. Like, you know, like when do you decide to start sacrificing stuff like your freedom? You know, because that seems to be
That should be the key, though, is like to learn lessons here, right? Guys, we're down to the last couple minutes. Freethinker Radio here on 90.1 KPFT. We broadcast as well on Float, on DLive, on Rockfin, and on Odyssey. You can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. One just headline I'll mention, Ghislaine Maxwell, partner of accused, convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, who didn't kill himself, is coming up to trial in the coming week. And just as of today, her family's appealing to the UN to let her out on bail because they say she's in danger and things of that sort. That trial is slated to begin next week. Who knows? But it's slated to begin next week after Thanksgiving. And we definitely will be keeping a close eye on that because that's an important one. We'll talk more about that next episode.
You see that?
Yeah, I got that one pulled up here. Just we got a minute or so here if you want to hit this headline.
Let's kill it real quick. Houston-based tech company Lancium announced Tuesday it's going to raise $150 million to build Bitcoin mines across Texas that will run on renewable energy. I thought that was kind of interesting. And then I got into it a little bit more, you know, and it tells a little bit about how mines work and what they do. And, you know, for general, that's pretty interesting. And there's a quote here. I think the fact that it's all energy companies investing suggests that we should have a shared vision of the role of Bitcoin mining and how it should play in the grid. So it sounds like some future planning and the use of Bitcoin, you know, for both economic planning for power, you know, for power, not just for Bitcoin, but for power, electricity, gas, et cetera, that sort of grid like that. Bitcoin mining serves two purposes, create new coins and to maintain a log of all transactions of existing digital tokens. To do so, that miners around the globe contribute their computing power to verifying all Bitcoin transactions.
And it's definitely an interesting one. We're going to have to, I think, pick it up next week on that one, Micah, if you want to. But we're happy to be back on KPFT on the FM dial. We're happy to be here with you guys. Please visit us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Find us everywhere at Freethinker Radio. And we'll be back next week. Peace.
Searching for the higher ground, searching for